He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.
We'll start about a recall for Ram pickup trucks from the 2015 model year, mostly through the 2017 model year. 2019 and 18 apparently are not affected, but it affects pickup trucks, rear tailgates, which I didn't know until I read this recall article that Dodge has had in its accessory list of things you can get: electrically locked tailgate pickups. Tailgates.
What is that?
Well, the tailgates
just goes, you know, up and down.
Yeah, they go up and latch with a double latch into the side of the main body of the pickup bed. And normally, I didn't know whether they were lockable manually ever. They might have been, but apparently Dodge has had electric locks, and apparently they're prone to failure of some kind, so that the tailgate can drop down suddenly when the vehicle is in motion or the vehicle is at rest. And if it is in motion and you've got bowling balls in the back pickup bed, which Jay will comment on in a minute, they might roll out and hit the vehicles following the truck.
Well, also if you have your lunchbox, which Jay might comment on in a minute.
Yes, you might get a free lunch.
The way people are driving these days, I swear to God, it just, you'll fly
going
out the
around
back,
corners or whatever, if a pickup tailgate drops down, if you've got a Dodge pickup truck, you might get some benefits or not from this occurring. Apparently, there have been no accidents. There have been no signs of anybody being hit by a
fly stuff bowling ball.
Maybe it's just the automatic fuel mileage enhancer. Because we all know, and people who don't know should know it, that if you're cruising on the highway with a pickup truck, you should, and if you don't have anything that can roll out of the bed, you should actually drive with the lift gate open, because it really improves the aerodynamics of a truck. There's nothing worse aerodynamically
than a vertical
than a pickup truck lift gate.
Which makes it also...
This is why you've got these little spoilers off the backs of the SUVs, and why you see these big valances, I guess you'll call them, on the cabs of tractor trailers, deflecting the air upward and away from going over the back sides of their trailers, and then swirling around, coming off the vertical back part of the trailer and causing drag on the truck. And so Jay's right. For a long time, you would see a lot of people in the last century also with their pickup tailgates down and or even removed if they weren't ever carrying things, because the air will flow more smoothly out the back of the pickup bed and not cause a drag effect.
Now, this may have been last century or two centuries ago, but we on a trip north on your favorite road, there was a pickup. It had like a large piece of, let's call it a log, that fully extended past, like out into the road. There was no flag. There was no anything that indicated on any level that it was well past the downed.
You mean the red flag?
Something.
Well, so what about this issue? Because it still goes on.
Is it a
step
law?
Step on the gas, pass the truck, and leave it behind.
That was not possible. But no, it really wasn't until that time. So
log probably won't slip out because of the weight.
This isn't a joke.
But I know it's not a joke.
Are you supposed to put that flag on, or doesn't it matter anymore?
Know what the laws are. But on a funny note, I was at an intersection going to Bradley a few weeks ago, and this guy had a bunch of plywood sheets in the back of the truck, and the tailgate was open, and he stopped at the four-way stop and then stepped on the gas to go through the intersection, and the truck went, and the plywood stayed right there in the middle of the intersection. Yeah.
Well,
it was hilarious.
And Jill, to your comment, that goes for these rear trailer hitch bicycle racks too. I was behind two this weekend, and it was not a red flag flying off the back of the bike. I'm not sure whether it's a law or not. It used to be a law you were supposed to in pickup trucks and that kind of thing. Anything extending more than 3 feet or so out of the back had to have a red flag on it. So if it didn't come through the windshield of the car following, if the truck should stop and the driver wasn't seeing what was going on. It's not followed very effectively if the law is there. I don't know. There are enough enforcement vehicles running around our roads to ever catch that kind of situation. There certainly aren't road stop checks for that kind of thing either. But it would be wise for everybody to use a red flag if they've got something dangling out of the end of their station wagon, their pickup truck, their hatchback, and the like.
Yeah, it was just one of those, yeah.
So let's move to your favorite topic, because, boy, were the roads cluttered this weekend with bicyclists. There were bicycle tours going on. Jay piped up and said over in the Catskills there was a bicycle race of 250-odd bicycles roaming the roads of Tannersville, New York. And let me tell you, they were all over, and there were left turns to take on round right-hand corners here in Sharon, our broadcast area, and I happened to be coming to Sharon, and there was a pack. There were several packs of bikes in starting from the Hotchkiss School area that had reached this area. I went around the corner, and there were three bicyclists with their arms out, one in the middle of the road to go left on Williams Road, I think it was, and all I could think of was, if there wasn't a bicyclist right there on the corner, people might come around that corner and see what I saw, and be going overly fast and have to brake in an emergency basis.
And the other thing that, just to add to that, is, and we talk about this right at this time of year, and is that the light changes. And between the light and the trees and the shadows, yeah. It's very hard yeah. to...
Well, a lot of the packs it is, and a lot of bikers are getting these very powerful lights. I know my daughter's a bike rider and a racer, and she bikes with very, very powerful
do
lights.
Do they use them strobes. During the day?
They do. Yes, they do.
Because that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Because
pack,
the sunlight
I was
and
seeing,
the...
There was a lead bicyclist, as long as he stayed the lead, who had his lights blinking. I did not notice that a lot of the mid-pack racers had either lights on their bikes to blink. But Jay's right.
More
and a lot more. Of them are weak, and they aren't very visible sometimes. But there are more and more having these high, I don't know whether they're LEDs or what, but they're much better than the old ones. And I would advise, if you're a bicyclist listening to this show and not a car driver, or even if you are a car driver, bicyclists should have these on all the time, daylight,
absolutely.
Nightlight. Because, and they need front ones as well.
Yep.
The front ones I saw were white.
Yes, they are.
And the red ones behind are flashing red. And I saw two or three, and they were very noticeable. They caught my eye if I was not directly seeing them ahead of time right away. And there's nothing better than high visibility warning lights.
So what I want to point out is, and I'm not going to take a position on this, it's just the fact that a lot of these bike tours we see on the weekends, like we had here in Sharon and like the tour of the Catskills, they are advertised and promoted as being bike tours, but you know they're technically not races.
Correct.
But keep in mind, these guys are all actually racing for position. So they get into situations where they get to a four-way stop sign,
and they're trying
and
to.
And they are, you know, technically supposed to stop and go and make a right. And I saw that right in Tannersville, right by the finish line of the Tour of the Catskills. The light turned red, and it said no right turn on red. Well, if you're in a pack of bicycles and you're fighting for position, I don't think anybody is going to actually
saw
stop
that
it.
Sign.
So my point is, just let's be aware that some of those tours are actually people who may or may not
more Tour de France
totally
than
compliant.
Tour de
yes
yeah.
Tour, except de France, Tour de France and all the professional bike races, they actually close the roads.
Right.
Right.
And but this is a little bit like don't try this, you know, is when you try to translate yeah. that. And the only other thing that I would like to add is if you are driving your vehicle, please try not to look as though you are looking down at something in your lap, either texting or watching something, because somebody just sort of blew a stop sign, and it was so clear that they weren't looking at the road. You know, at least have the decency to look as though you're paying attention.
Even if you go through without stopping, I don't know.
And again, well, I'll get back to, you know, driving tips and cues. You know, really your eyes should be moving all the time. I'm not even going to get in a debate of whether we should be looking at our phones or not, but whatever we're doing, our eyes should be moving, mainly looking at the front.
Yeah.
But we are looking in rearview mirrors. We're turning. We should learn to turn our heads.
Even though there are cameras.
And
you got to use your eyes.
And honestly, you need to train yourself to do that, because a lot of people, you know, if you look over your shoulder to make a pass on the highway, for instance, typically you will move your hands and start making that turn. And if you're turning around to slap your kids, and that's why minivans now have little rearview mirrors and auto slap slappers for kids, because if you turn around to look at your kids, you're gonna weave right, left,
or your dogs. It's
amazing when you turn your head one way or the other, how the steering wheel can start turning too without you even knowing it.
Absolutely,
but it's just that's a.
But you can train yourself.
And if there are listeners here who say, "Oh, I've done this." I know
you
exactly what they're
yourself.
Talking about.
Absolutely.
Listener will think about it more now that you are driving, and when you turn your head, try to keep your wheel going straight or whatever you're trying to do. Let's go to technology. There's been so much technology installed in cars in the last 2 to 3 car years that people are now starting to find themselves purchasing cars without knowing what they've got installed on those cars. As I said on an earlier show, I found that out when I went and test drove a new 2018 Jeep Cherokee a few months ago, got on our Route 8 in Northwest Connecticut, and was driving along and started to feel my steering wheel feeling very loose and all that, and it turned out I had lane keeping guidance assist in this Jeep model that I was driving. It was an add-on. It wasn't a standard feature, but articles are starting to show up now that more and more consumers are throwing feedback at dealers or their salespeople or out in the media or probably over the net about how their cars are taking some control that they aren't aware that the car can do, and they're objecting to some of these electronic features because they are making the cars weave. And Jay has got a very interesting sideline to this in that he's driven several models with this feature, and there is definitely a difference in competency of this lane keeping guidance feature between the models of cars he's driven with Jay, being the best, and so far, and one being the loosest.
The Subaru is good, but it does bounce back from line
to
line.
So
from the center line to the sideline on the roads, or if you're on the highway in, let's say, the middle lane, which, of course, you would only be in if you're passing somebody. But if you are in a middle lane, the car will bounce back between the lines, even dotted lines of the middle lane. So the system.
When you say bounce back, you mean
if the car will drift, and in the case of the Subaru, and I keep in mind this is like a 2-year-old system that I drove, and I know they improve them all the time. The eyesight feature on Subarus. When I say bounces back, is if the car is drifting one way, it tends to overcorrect. So instead of making minute corrections, so now if you're drifting to the left, it'll overcorrect to the right. Now you're drifting to the right, and so it's not an autopilot in like the case of the Subaru. Now other systems like Volvo and Audi, you can pretty much let them go and not touch the wheel, other than you have to do that every 10-15 seconds anyway. And they work pretty well. But to Robin's point earlier, I'm thinking of one episode I had with it was an Audi, where I've driven it a couple times back and forth from Florida. And the last time I drove it, the feature, the lane-keeping feature was on. And at some point, I just wanted it off. And me, the car guy, I was unable to figure out how to deactivate the system. And I had done it before. I've driven a car. My point is, these car systems are complex. When we purchase these cars, we need to learn the systems. Like I've said it, I know, over and over again. But it takes some
thoughtful
reading.
Attention.
It takes some practice. Yeah. It takes figuring out things before you even get behind the wheel.
And taking delivery of a car where the salesperson is probably going to try to tell you all about this stuff is not going to solve the problem when you drive out of the dealer's lot and haven't really done it yourself. So you may hear all about this stuff in the parking lot of the dealer as your salesperson is sitting next to you in the passenger seat and explaining all these newfangled things you've got. And Jay's point about deactivation, you might want to deactivate one of these systems, whether it's lane keeping assist, whether it's I don't know what. There's a multitude number of things. And you may want to turn them off quickly. And if you don't know how to turn them off, and they're all deactivatable, that's correct.
Yeah.
One way or another. And they usually default back on to the on status when you have turned the car off, gone in and gotten your had your bathroom break in the highway, and you turn it back on, and
it's back on again.
They'll default to the on system, so you have to remember that if you want, or wait till you're annoyed again and then turn it off.
No, I this goes back to an earlier show actually, where I was describing someone who had the new BMW. I don't know what it is. SUV.
Yeah.
And the lane keeper she was trying to get out of the way of something, and she was having a fight with the lane keeper.
Well, that's true.
And
you know,
that's what I was mentioning at the time. You guys were sort of like,
you can override that as long as you grip the wheel and turn it.
Can
so,
you?
So, yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. You are in control, but people get
the car doesn't feel like it.
It's like anti-lock, anti-stop brakes when they first came on. When people activated, when those brakes activated, it made it feel like the car wasn't going to stop, and people would jump their foot off thinking something was wrong when they felt the vibration. It took a while for them to get used to the fact that you just have to keep applying the pedal and let the car computer do the work. But so the same thing is with these systems. You can continue to steer your car like this Jeep situation. Yeah, I overrode it, but it certainly made me feel like the wheel wasn't directly connected to a rod connected to the steering rack, because it was steering itself back to, as Jay said, keeping between the two marked lanes, which is why our lanes are getting better marked, incidentally, on a lot of the roads
on the
around
here,
because the states have got to mark these roads so these systems are effectively acting the way they're designed to act.
So these are all safety features that I think are really
good.
Really good. Very, there's a net positive, and I think mostly we should keep them on. And while we're on the subject of safety, I do want to bring up, and you have talked about this on other shows, I think, here on this radio station, and we certainly have talked about it quite a lot. We're seeing too many young kids getting hurt or
permanently,
yes. And I've been thinking about it a lot in the last week and trying to find, be the big thinker and what are the solutions. And it's tough to come up with solutions. I mean, we can all assess, we can all recognize the problem. This has been going on ever since I was a kid. I think I think things are better than they were a few decades ago. But I think what we've seen in the last few weeks, it's just not acceptable. And the question is, what do we do? You know, and I think better cars certainly are one thing. Education is another. And programs like Survive the Drive are absolutely great. They have to be reinforced.
Complete use of seat belts in the rear seats as well as the front seats are also part of this thing, because one of the accidents I think Jay is referring to, somebody was unbelted in the back, somebody was belted in the front. I believe the person belted survived. I believe the person in the back did not. And, you know, alcohol is certainly could be possible. You don't know whether they've been coming from a party and what the status of the people are in the car is. But you cannot be too careful about how you drive when you're not in perfect condition, and when you're in the car, you should use all the safety features available to you, primarily the seat belts first, and then the airbags will take over if something else happens.
And these are things that just, you know, should be givens no matter your age. I understand, and you're shaking your head, but my point is, you would no more try to take off an airplane, you know, you would no more capture it with the doors open and the stairs still hanging out.
I think the seat belt thing is something that in this day and age
should not
be an issue.
Right.
I think that anybody, even if one of us, would never happen to me, of course, but even I think if I were totally drunk and got in a car, I would still put my belt. I think it has to be something that is absolutely ingrained in each and every one of us. And as the older generations, as parents, it's our job to lead by example and actually make, you know, 100% of the time, everybody in a car is belted. That is the rule number one. Now, we should still make all efforts possible for cars not to go off the road, for kids who are either been drinking, impaired. Which they shouldn't be in the first, impaired in any
you take,
way.
You know, get the other home
not,
some other
we
way.
We should take
they're
steps
not.
For them not to end up behind the wheel. So we have to think about the bigger picture. But if people start, if people wear their seat belts all the time, it will go a long way
to saving a life.
To saving a life.
Right.
It's that simple.
The other thing, let's go back to safety features. starting from 2015 forward, Jeep, and maybe in all their lines, has this annoying, well, until you get used to it, had a safety feature that if your door is open and you put the car in drive with the door not closed and latched, the automatic emergency brake goes on and the car will not move, often to the
disadvantage of the person.
Well, the car will jerk a little bit as you put it in drive and try to accelerate, and then the brake goes into action. But that's something that reminds you that, you know, the doors ought to be closed. I've always wondered whether or not they should have a electrical contact point in the safety belt, and if the belt, at least the front belts for sure, but if you had all the belts armed, you could probably have a lot of technical problems. If the belts weren't all latched, preferably around a body, the car wouldn't go forward and drive either, like the open door situation. That's extreme, but as Jay said, you cannot be too careful to when you get in the car, in whatever condition you are, and you have a car full of kids who've been partying and they're laughing and they're bouncing around, the driver or somebody should be doing a body check and seatbelt check to see that they're all belted in. And if they had this electrical thing, of course, the car wouldn't move. If there were seat sensors,
they had a breathalyzer thing, the car wouldn't move, which wouldn't be a bad thing. But that's my just personal opinion. But what I want to add to this is going back to programs like Survive the Drive. You got to start it early. And
you've got to start it very early.
Right at the same time that they're learning to drive. And while I came up in the city, I've had now enough time in the country with quotes around it to know that, you know, if you're going to put your kids in a car, they better be really wide awake.
I think we have to reinforce the message over and over and over again. And I know the opening line of Bob Green's Survive the Drive program is describing, ugly situations. And I think we have to not be afraid to
expose
those situations.
To kids and not kids. I'm sure we all recall a few years ago, and up until a few years ago, the high school, where is it, in Pauling? There's a high school, when you go down Route 22, that at the end of every school year, they would have two very badly wrecked cars on the front lawn of...
Might have been Weepatuck along 22.
I forget which one of the schools it is, but... It was a very powerful message, and people got offended and didn't like, but
didn't like seeing it, right?
It was unsightly, so it was removed. But the point is, the message was like, yo.
This could be you.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take much. And, what else do we do? I'm not quite sure.
We'll just close in the last few seconds. I want to say that the apparent large SUV additions to both Subaru and Volkswagen are proving to be very popular. Amateur viewing, so sees a lot of Atlases around that corner. The Ascents are just showing up. I've talked to a few people with the Atlases. They all love them. They love the size, everything else. They love the handling. I'm sure the same is about the Subaru Ascents. I'm waiting to see one here and talk to that owner too, and maybe I'll get to drive one.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.